భద్రం కర్ణేభిః శృణుయామదేవాః భద్రం పశ్యేమాక్షభిర్యజత్రాః స్థిరైరంగైః తుష్టువాంశస్తనూభిః వ్యసేమదేవహితం యదాయుః స్వస్తి న ఇంద్రో వృద్ధశ్రవాః స్వస్తినః పూషా విశ్వవేదాః స్వస్తినస్తార్క్ష్యు వరిష్ఠనేమిః స్వస్తినో బృహస్పతిర్దధాత్. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతిః. లెట్ అస్ హియర్ ఓన్లీ ఆస్పీషియస్ థింగ్స్ విత్ అవర్ ఇయర్స్ అండ్ సీ ఓన్లీ ఆస్పీషియస్ థింగ్స్ విత్ అవర్ ఐస్ అండ్ లెట్ ఆల్ ది ఆర్గన్స్ అండ్ సెన్సెస్ బ్రింగ్ ఓన్లీ ఆస్పీషియస్ థింగ్స్ టు అవర్ మైండ్. ఓం పీస్ పీస్ పీస్. Now, in the last class, we were dealing with the eighth mantra of this Upanishad. The eighth mantra clearly explained that the Supreme Reality cannot be called either the experiencer of waking state or the experiencer of the dream state or the experiences of deep sleep states. It is really not a state, the Supreme Reality, the immanent principle, the transcendent principle, and the omnipresent principle is beyond words, beyond all that we can conceive of. It is only an experiential truth, something we can only experience and understand through intuitive inner experience. Now, just a few points I shall repeat what we have already discussed in all the seven mantras. Because the seventh mantra of this Upanishad is the most important of the text, which has got a total of 12 mantras. The seventh mantra is important because it describes what actually cannot be described, what can only be experienced. And it uses the language of negation. When we go on negating whatever we experience in the empirical world, we reach a point where there is something, the witness, the subject, that we cannot negate. And when everything is negated, there is no need to use the language of affirmation, because what is left out is the reality, which can't be named, which can't be explained. And earlier we already described that the self, the Atman, called Turiya in the Mandukya Upanishads, which is the experiencer, which is seated in the waking state, is Vaishvanara. Now, this Vaishvanara is in fact the totality of gross bodies of creation. It is the totality of all our experiences at the gross level. In a way, it can be called the universal in form. And its individual dimension is Vishwa. So Vishwa is the individual experiencer in waking state. Vaishvanara is the totality of all that we experience in the waking state. And remember, in the waking state, all the experiences take place at the gross level, which means we can never experience anything in this gross state without mind and the senses of perception. And again, the self seated in dream as the experiencer is called in this Upanishad Taijasa. And in other words, we can say it is the totality of all subtle bodies because the experience takes place at a subtle level in dream. We already explained earlier, in waking state, experiences take place at the gross level, which means we see when mind and eyes come together. We hear when mind and ears come together. We come to know of an object by touching when the sense of touch and mind come together. In dream, all these experiences do take place, but everything is happening at a mental level. So it is called subtle. Wherever external senses of perception or senses of action are not involved, it is subtle. Whenever they are involved, it is gross. That is the important principle. Now, in waking state, as I said, the totality of all the experiences together is called Vaishvanara. We can say in Sanskrit language, Vaishvanara means the totality, something which leaves everything at the gross level. Sometimes called a Virat. Virat means totality. The empirical phenomena can be called Virat. The entire, the totality of empirical phenomena can be called Virat. In dream states, the experiencer is Taijasa, and the totality of all the experiences in dream is called Hiranyagarbha. It means the totality of all subtle experiences. And in deep sleep, the experiencer is called Prajna, and the totality of all experiences is called Ishvara. This is a very important point we have to remember. The word Ishvara in Mantukya tradition signifies something different from what we understand by the word. Ishvara means God, capital letter G, monotheistic God, that is Ishvara. Not gods, devatas, no. Small letter G, but capital letter G, God, Ishvara, means the supreme principle that we can think of in terms of name and form. In Mandukya tradition, Ishvara or God, capital letter G, the monotheistic God, is the totality of all our experiences in deep sleep. And there is a very important metaphysical reason for this. We know that in deep sleep, there is no misapprehension. There is only non-comprehension. We don't understand, we don't recognize anything in deep sleep. But in waking and dream states, there is not only non-comprehension, but there is also misapprehension. You not only do not see the rope, but you mistake it for the snake. This is happening in waking state. In dream, it is not happening. Sorry, in dream, the same thing happens. In dream also, there is not only non-comprehension, but also there is misapprehension. Because whatever you experience in waking state, you can experience in dream state, because there is no distinction. Dream and waking are the same, except that dream experiences are taking place at the mental level, waking state experiences are taking place at the gross level, sensory level. That's the only difference. So there is absolutely no distinction with regard to what we see and experience in dream and waking state. But in deep sleep, there is only non-comprehension. There is no misapprehension. You don't see anything. You don't see the rope. So you don't see the snake also. Seeing the rope will solve the problem of seeing the snake. But you mistake the rope for the snake because you do not see the rope for the rope. So the point to remember is, in deep sleep or susupti, there is only non-comprehension, absolutely no awareness, complete lack or absence of awareness. Now, therefore, according to Mandukya methodology, deep sleep is the cause of both dream and waking state. Why? Because deep sleep is associated with complete absence of awareness. Now, complete absence of awareness or lack of awareness is the cause of non-comprehension. If you are aware that it is rope, you don't mistake it for the snake. If you realize that this is Brahman, then you don't look upon this world as something real. You don't look upon this world of name and form as something real. Another example, a goldsmith who understands that it's all gold may not perhaps see much difference between a necklace and a ring. Both are made of the gold because he sees only the gold. So those who realize that everything is Brahman, everything is Supreme Consciousness, won't see the world. And those who see the world won't see Brahman. Those who are wearing these golden ornaments and enjoying the shape and its form won't think of the fact that it is made of gold. All the time they are not aware of it. But a goldsmith will see only gold. But a common person who wears this will see only the ornament. So, and a person who is not spiritually enlightened may see this world and see that this is the only reality. A person who has reached the highest level of spiritual consciousness will see and experience only Atman and won't see the world as its reality. A point to be made clear is this. Such an enlightened spiritual person may live in this world, work in this world, interact with other people, but he won't be affected by all the problems which are natural in the empirical world. That's the main difference. Because living in this world, he knows that world as world is not the eternal reality. Atman or Supreme Consciousness is the only eternal reality. Now, this background should be kept in mind before we go to the eighth mantra. We are going to deal with the eighth verse. That is what. Now, in eighth mantra, we are entering altogether a new phase in the evolution of Mandukya philosophy. So far, we were busy at the metaphysical level. From eighth mantra onwards, the Upanishad is addressing those who cannot quickly understand or comprehend the subtle metaphysical principles behind. From 8th mantra onwards, the Upanishad is dealing with the subject of meditation. In Sanskrit, it is called pranavopasana, means a kind of spiritual practice based on meditation on the three syllables which constitute pranava. Pranava means omkara. Om, that we call. A, U, Ma. These are the three syllables which constitute omkara or pranava. It's in Sanskrit language it is called. A, U, and Ma. In Sanskrit, A is also the first letter in Sanskrit alphabet. And Ma is the last of the consonant. It is the 25th consonant, beginning with Ka. That is, according to grammatical rule, Kadayo Mavasana, means the consonants begin with Ka and ends with Ma, total 25 consonants. So, A is the first one, Ma is the last one. And U comes in between. So these three syllables constitute omkara. pranava. And these three syllables are equated to three levels of experience as one meditates on pranava or omkara. Remember, this is the subject is pranavopasana, means the spiritual practice of meditation on the meaning and the significance of Om. Om it's called. And each of these syllables, that is A, U and Ma, is equated to each of the three levels of experience: Jagrat, Sopna and Sushupti. And by this meditation, a spiritual seeker can reach a higher level of spiritual unfoldment. This meditative technique is meant for those who cannot fully understand, no beginner can fully understand the significance of the great metaphysical spiritual truth expounded in the seventh mantra, Nanta Prajnam, Bahish Prajnam, etc. See, that is the last word in Vedantic philosophy and also Vedantic experience. Neti Neti. You negate everything, ultimately you reach a point where you cannot negate the one who negates. So, the eighth mantra, the Upanishad starts explaining, it begins the description of a process of meditation. I shall explain this slowly, stage by stage. But there are a few points to be remembered, those who are not familiar with Sanskrit language. You know, Om, that you find here in the writings above, Om. Om actually consists of three syllables, A, U and Ma. And we already explained in the earlier mantra that Omkara or Om actually signifies the Supreme Truth Turiya. How it is? Now, when you chant this Om, the Omkara, you reach a point where it gets dissolved in silence, where nothing is heard. If you chant it loudly in a sonorous voice, you find as you chant, it gets dissolved. It terminates in silence. The silence is devoid of any quartet. The silence cannot be signified by any syllable or any letter. And that point is symbolic of Turiya, or the real experience dimension of Atman in this Upanishad. That is the idea behind. Another point to remember is, as all Upanishads, other Upanishads, Mandukya Upanishad also approaches the subject of Vedanta from two different angles. It is called Adhyaropa Apavada. You know, if I explain, it becomes very simple. Now, if you tell somebody, well, this world is unreal, Atman or Supreme Consciousness is the only reality, even a philosophy student cannot understand even intellectually. But a spiritually enlightened person can quickly understand. So any spiritual seeker who is a beginner would find it very difficult to understand the meaning of the statement, See, in the Upanishad, sarvam khalu idam brahma. Everything is Brahman. Brahman is only reality. This world is mithya, which means mithya should be understood as something which is not eternal, means relative. It's difficult to understand. Now, the Upanishadic sages come down to our level, who cannot fully understand this high spiritual metaphysical truth. Then, they try to explain the true nature of this world, which we mistakenly consider to be real. Now we think of this world, all the experiences that we can have in this world, and then ultimately the sages convince us that this world as world is not eternal. The world as world is not eternal. It means the world as something consisting of name and form, which is changing every minute, is really not eternal. This we understand. And then, slowly, the spiritual seeker at the next stage understands that this world as world is non-eternal, and along with that, he or she also understands that behind and above this relative phenomena, there is the absolute reality, Atman or Brahman. So, you are not asked to believe in anything. You are not asked to take anything for granted. The Upanishad comes down to our level and tells us, well, you believe this world is real. All right, you look at this world. You think it is real, but then you analyze and then you understand the world as world certainly cannot be real. Now, if it is real, it not real means it is only relative. The idea is it is not absolutely real. That's the point. That point should be always understood, because there is so much of misunderstanding about Advaita or Vedanta. Whenever we make this statement, simple statement you find in books, Brahman alone is real, this world is unreal. Now, anybody who reads this, if he doesn't have a metaphysical background, will have a totally wrong notion about as to what it implies. What the Upanishad tells us is this. This world, as we find, as consisting of name and form, which is changing every moment, is not real in the absolute sense. And when we say that it is not real in the absolute sense, it has got a great philosophical implication in Vedanta. Because in Vedantic tradition, as I have explained many times earlier, but should be repeated here in this particular context, it is very important to keep in mind some of the criteria for considering anything to be absolutely real in Vedantic tradition. First, it should be experienced as the same in all the three states of human experience: waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. If it remains the same, and if it is experienced as the same in all these three levels of human experience, that is waking, dream, and deep sleep, Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, as it is called Upanishad. If it remains unchanging, then it is real. But if there is a slightest change between what we experience in waking state and what we experience in dream state and what we experience in deep sleep state, then it cannot be real in the absolute sense. Vedanta doesn't say this world is unreal in the absolute sense. That is also point to be remembered. Vedanta says this world is not real in the absolute sense, but Vedanta doesn't say that this world is unreal in the absolute sense, because the world is experienced in our day-to-day common sense life. We experience it. We are part of the world. So we can't say the world is unreal in the absolute sense. So it is neither real in the absolute sense nor unreal in the absolute sense. So it is only relative. So in Vedanta it's called Sadasat Vilakshana, means something which is distinct and different from both absolutely real and absolutely unreal. So this is one point. Second criterion for judging whether something is absolutely real or not is this. It should be beyond time, space and causation. It should remain the same at all the three points of time, mean past, present and future. And remember, there is only one reality which can be experienced as the same in past, in the past, present and future. And that is which is devoid of birth, devoid of existence and devoid of death. Something which is born cannot be absolutely real because it did not exist before it was born. And if it is born, it will certainly die. So there are different levels of existence between birth and death. So it should be beyond time. In Sanskrit, it's called Trikala Atita, Shadvikara Atita. Means it is beyond the triple dimensions of time, past, present and future. And also, it should be completely devoid of six changes. Six changes means being born, because it's a state of change. From a state of non-existence before birth, you are coming into the state of existence when you are born. So it is a change. And then existing, growing, evolving, decaying and dying out. These are the six changes. So Atman or Brahman is only reality which is beyond any of these changes, which is beyond time. And it is beyond space, because there is nowhere in the world where that reality is not present. And it is not caused by anything. This reality is not the effect of anything. It is not caused by, it doesn't have a cause. This reality cannot be even be called a cause, because if you use the word cause, it always implies the possibility of an effect. So Brahman or Atman cannot be called either a cause or effect. But then one can say, you know, it is a final cause. Final cause can be used, but with a rider, with a condition, it doesn't have an effect. So it is the final cause without the possibility of an effect. It is the supreme reality. These are the criteria by which we judge whether something is absolutely real or not. There is nothing that you can think of other than Brahman which is absolutely real in this context. Now, this is the later experience. So once you are convinced of the transitoriness of empirical experiences, empirical phenomena, then you think about what exactly is the trans-empirical, the noumenal, the transcendental reality. Then you go on negating all these empirical phenomena. Sinanta prajnam, bhagish prajnam, ubhayada prajnam, etc. In the seventh mantra you find, this Atman, this supreme reality, is not the experiencer of the dream state or waking state or deep sleep state, etc. And then It is the only reality which can be known only through the medium of experience. This is the point to be kept in mind. Now we'll come to eighth mantra. Of course, just before that, you can, those of you who have got the book, the last word of seventh mantra should be explained a little. Sa atma sa vijñeyaha. You find one mantra in the seventh mantra, the last word that needs an explanation. The last part of the seventh mantra. Yes, now, one point to be remembered is this. It is in the sa atma, this atma, and this atma sa vijñeyaha, this atma is to be known. This word should be understood. The Upanishad uses a term which itself later will declare to be inadequate. That is the speciality of this expression. Disatma savikneha. The translation of this word savikneha means it is to be known. He is to be known. Disatma is the only reality. It is prapanchopashamam. When you realize that Atman, Aturiya, this world ceases to exist. In this means, you realize the transitoriness or unreality or relativity of this world. And along with that, you get an experience which you cannot explain. And Shantam, Shivam, Chadurtham, Advaitam, Chadurtham, Manyande, etc. Chaturtham Manyande, that these some of these terms are elaborately explained by the Bhashyakara. I won't read the Bhashya right now, but I should explain. The word Chaturtham means fourth. Now, fourth means, see, the word is used, Advaitam Chaturtham. Turiya is stated to be the fourth stage. But that is only a problem of language, because the Upanishad uses the word, Upanishad uses expression like, you know, first one is waking state, second one is dream state, third one is deep sleep state. Now, and when all these terminate and culminate, when they cease to exist, the Upanishad has to use the word. That's a problem of language of philosophy, you know, Chaturtham. But actually it is not the fourth state. This Atma, this Turiya is not the fourth state. The silence that you experience when you chant Omkara, Pranava, where the chanting culminates in a state of silence, implies that it is beyond words. So it is not the fourth. A, U, Ma, these are the three syllables which constitute Omkara. This is Om, this year. Om. Om is a combination of these three syllables. A, U, and Ma. Now, after the last of these syllables, the Upanishad says it ends in silence. The silence is not the fourth state. It is the state of the intuitive experience. But the Upanishad uses the word Chaturtham. It only shows the limitation of language of philosophy. Because the three terms have been used, one, two, three. Now it has to use the word fourth term. But it doesn't mean fourth. It is not a state. It is a level of experience. It is not a fourth state. These points are made clear in Shankaracharya's commentary. But when we read simple English translations without the commentary, perhaps there is always a possibility of confusion. We may even think that Turiya is the fourth state. Turiya is not the fourth state. Turiya is the state which goes beyond, which transcends all the other empirical experiences of waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. Second point is sa atma, that is clear. Sa vigneha, that mantra, the translation is, it should be known, it has to be known, etc. Is this Atman, is this Turiya something to be known? No. It is something to be experienced. But then the Upanishad has to use some terms, it has to use certain vocabulary. Therefore, the Upanishad says, Savignyeka. So Bhashyakara will explain, it should not be misunderstood that this Atman is something that anyone can know intellectually, the way you can know the earlier states, I mean the dream state or deep sleep state, etc. It goes beyond both. Because when you realize that this Atman is the only reality, when you transcend the earlier states, the waking, dream and deep sleep states, then you get an experience, and that experience is not a state of knowledge, it is a state of experience. It cannot be objectified. It doesn't become the object of the process of knowing. It is not something which can become known. It is not object of knowledge. So Bhashyakara, the commentator, will tell you there's a problem, because when you reach that experience, the teacher, the students, and the subject that is being discussed or taught, they merge into one. When we reach that level of experience, then we go even beyond Upanishads. Because Upanishads themselves declare that, well, we cannot explain the Supreme Reality. Veda, Bhavanti, etc. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there are long passages where the Upanishads declare that when you reach that level of intuitive knowledge, you go beyond words, you go beyond Upanishads. So all these Upanishads, all these discussions are only meant for removing the wrong notion that we have got. The right notion nobody can create. So in the commentaries, the great commentator Shankaracharya uses, again and again, he uses the analogy of, you know, the rope and snake. We have to use it again and again. This is the easiest. Sometimes great thinkers say, the old rope never breaks and the old snake never dies. Because this analogy has been used from 2nd century onwards by Buddhist thinkers, Vijnanavadin, Shunyavadin, Nagarjuna, they all use the same analogy. It is continuing, I mean, for the last several centuries it is being used. Now, again, suppose there is a rope, you mistake it is a snake, and you bring light, you find it's a rope. Now, the fact that it is the rope and not the snake, this knowledge is not a result of your bringing light. Even if you don't bring light, even if that room remains dim lit, not properly lit, still the rope will be rope. The light only serves one purpose. It removes the darkness, which was the obstacle, which stood in your way of realizing the fact that it is rope. So the fact that it is rope is not the result of bringing light. The light only served one purpose. It removed darkness. And then what the object was, it's self-effulgent. It will declare itself, I am rope. You don't require the help of light. So light serves only one purpose. It removes darkness. Similarly, all discussions, all Upanishads, Shastram it is called. Shishyaha, Shastram, Shasta in the language of the Karika. Gaudapada use in comment in one commentary on Gaudapada Karika, Bhashyakara makes this point clear. Shastra means the teacher. Shishya means student. Shastram means the subject that is being discussed. They are relevant only at the relative level when you have not really reached this experience. Once you get this experience, then you go beyond all this. Therefore, sa atma sa vijñeha, that term has to be used, understood in this context, but the Upanishad has to use a term, and that term is used in this particular context because in the earlier context such terms were used, so the Upanishad uses that particular term. This is the speciality of the last part of this mantra, sa atma sa vijñeha. Now we will come to the eighth mantra of the Upanishad. Yes. The mantra is this. Soyam atma adhyaksharam omkaraha adhimatram pada matraha matrascha padaha akara ukaru makara iti. I shall just split the word and put those students, you know, those who are interested. Saha ayam, this atma, adhyaksharam. Adhyakshara means when you explain in the context of syllables, you, syllables which constitute omkara, om, that means. So, when you look at this atma from the standpoint of the syllables or letters, well, we can say it is omkara. You know, omkara actually, from the standpoint of Sanskrit alphabet, it contains in it all possibilities of Sanskrit language. Because this vowel sound a in Sanskrit, the first one, it is so universal. You can never utter anything in Sanskrit language without some connection with a. So it is all pervading. And again, this syllable is uttered in Sanskrit language with when your mouth is completely open. It's a purely open vowel. So when your mouth is completely open, you can utter the syllable a. Ma is used when your mouth is completely shut, and u when it is partly open and partly shut. So, in fact, all possible phonetics, phonemes, or syllables, or sound systems, the entire speech system is contained in these three syllables. And entire creation, all the world, is denoted by you by language using terms which some way or other are related to a, u and ma. Because you have to, when you use a name to call an object, either you have to keep your mouth half closed in a ma or a open, or u half partly closed, partly open. There is no other way of, within this range you have to use. And entire empirical world is nothing but a counterpart of all the words that you can think of, or you can speak, or you can utter. See, we can never think of an object without a corresponding name attached to it. Suppose you have seen a person yesterday, or an object, you can think of that person or object only in relation to a word which corresponds to that person or object. Suppose you have seen an object, the name of which you don't know, then also you will remember, you can think of that object as something. I saw an something, the name of which I don't know. That is its name for you. So you can never actually mentally conceive of or imagine anything in this world without a corresponding phonetic counterparts, linguistic counterparts. As I said, you know, even if you see an object or a person whose name you do not know, still when you recall, that person exists in your mind as somebody, a stranger, whose name I don't forget, I don't remember, or I do not know. That is that name you attach to that person, a stranger or somebody whose name I don't know. So these words signify the person or the object which you have seen, whom you have seen. What does it mean? Om, in a way, it signifies, it denotes all that you can think of, that you can conceive of in the empirical world. And these three syllables, A, U, and Ma, according to Upanishad, A is related to waking state experience. U is related to dream state experience. Ma is related to deep sleep experience. No one can have any experience other than any of these three. In fact, these three experiences constitute the totality of all possible experience. The totality of human experience is contained in these three states. Either, that means dream state, waking state, and deep sleep state. So on the one hand, you have Om. The Om stands for the totality of human experience spread over waking, dream, and deep sleep states. So they constitute the phenomenal world, the empirical world. And where the empirical world dissolves, where name and form cease to exist, there is no letter, there is no syllable, there is no sound, because there is no language that you can explain. That is Turiya, that is Atma. So, now we'll come to this. So, the eighth sloka, we are going to describe this. So, description, Saha Ayam Atma Omkaraha. This is the prose order. Adhimatram. Adhimatram means when you analyze it, when you describe it in the context of in the context of units. Padaha. Pada means quarters. Matraha. Akaraha means a. Ukaraha, the word is u. And makaraka, this syllable, ma. Matraha. So, a, u, and ma, these are the matras. And there are also the quarters. Quarters means waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. Of course, those who are not following the Upanishad mantra, you can just keep this in mind. Omkara on the one hand, the three states of human experience on the other hand. Om consists of three syllables, A, U, and Ma. And our human experiences consist of three levels. That is waking, dream, and deep sleep. Remember, Turiya is not included in this because Turiya goes beyond all this. Turiya is present in all the three states, but Turiya is also distinct from all the three states. Turiya is present in, Atman is present in all waking state experiences, but Atman is not confined to waking state. it goes beyond both. Because if Atman or Turiya, if it were confined to waking state, then how do you explain your dream state? Therefore, the same Atman, the same Turiya, which was present in waking state, is also present in dream state. That means this Atman is not confined to any of these states. And again, even in deep sleep, where you experience rest and blissfulness, this Atman is present. How do we know? Because when we come out of deep sleep, when you come back to the state of waking state experience, we are able to feel the blissfulness that we had when we were deep asleep. I had a wonderful sleep. I feel rested. So the I is the same I who experienced restfulness or blissfulness in deep sleep, the same I who is experiencing dreams, and the same I who is walking through the streets of San Francisco in waking state. So this I, the experiencer, it's called the seer, witness, is the same. So it's not included in these three states of experience that we are talking about. So that distinction should be kept in mind. So a is related to waking state, u is related to dream state, and ma is related to deep sleep state. That is a simple description. So that's the description, the explanation. Now we'll come to explanation of this mantra. Now, this Atma, this Turiya, which we already discussed earlier, Chadushpad, etc., is Om. This Atma is Om from the point of view of syllable or letter, Adhyaksharam. And this Om is made up of three letters. It consists of three letters. And these three letters are its sounds. Matra means sounds here. You may call it syllable, but a syllable may not be the right word. Matra is sound. We can say sound is a more accurate translation, sound. Now, the padas mean the quarters. Quarters means, we already explained, the Jagrat experience, that means the waking state experience, dream state, and deep sleep experiences. These three states are equivalent to the three letters or three syllables which constitute Om. I mean A, U, and Ma. So that is the simple point. So it is, in a way, it is a description of the method of meditation. Now we'll come to the first of these meditative techniques explained here, the ninth mantra. Here, meditating on the first syllable of Omkara. What is the first syllable? A. Meditating on it as Brahman and its result is explained here. A brief outline can be given today. See, A, as I said earlier, is the first letter in Sanskrit language, alphabets. And it is also the first state that we experience normally. Waking state, the first experience. So there is a uniformity and identity, a similarity between A and waking state and waking state experience. Second point. Waking state experience is gross. A is also gross because it becomes subtle when the mouth is half closed. U. And you can see waking state experiences are gross, and compared to waking state experiences, dream state experiences are subtle. As I said, in dream state, all experiences take place at the mental level, not at the gross level. We walk in dream, and we may read a book, we may understand things, all these dreams we can have. But then, when we are walking, we are not walking with gross legs. Even the act of walking in dream is related to mental impression or memory. So everything is projected by mind. Senses of perception, senses of action can be experienced to be active in dream. But that activity is only a mental activity, not a physical activity. So it is subtle. Just as U is subtle compared to A. Now, in deep sleep, it becomes completely merged. As I said earlier, we have to remember, deep sleep, or Sushupti, is explained in the Upanishads as the source of both dream and waking state experiences. This may be slightly confusing unless explained further. I already told earlier that in deep sleep or Sushupti, there is no misapprehension. There is only non-comprehension. In waking state and dream state, there is not only non-comprehension, but non-comprehension causes misapprehension. And what is the cause of misapprehension? Misapprehension is caused by non-comprehension. You mistake a rope for a snake because you are not able to recognize it is a rope. So the misunderstanding is always the result of absence of proper understanding. Non-recognition is the cause of false cognition. Therefore, in Sushupti, in which there is only non-cognition or non-apprehension, is the cause of waking state and dream state experiences according to Upanishads. That is the point to be remembered. I think what's the time now? Already. Okay. If you want any clarification on some of the foreign points, for 5-10 minutes we can spend, otherwise we can conclude. This is a new subject. You have to remember, this is from 9th mantra, 9th sloka onwards, we are discussing a method of meditative practice for students who are not of the highest type, for those, spiritual aspirants, who may not be able to fully comprehend the higher metaphysical spiritual truths explained in the 7th mantra. So that's the point. So if there is any subject for discussion or anything, you can ask, and I can explain.
And the relationship to the different states that we experience. Yeah. And you also mentioned.
And in fact, we are going to deal with this comparison in the coming mantras.
Yes.
In the coming mantras, there's a long discussion. But before entering those Sanskrit verses, I wanted to give a brief outline.
Yes. Yes. You also mentioned that Turiya is not considered here in this discussion of the analysis of Om being the entire spectrum of all sounds.
Yeah, you have to remember, Turiya is not included. That point should be made clear.
Yes.
See, Turiya is present in all the three all the three states of experience. Turiya is Atman. If Atman is not present, one can never experience anything waking state. If Atman is not present, one can never experience dream state. So, Turiya is present in all the three states as the witness, drashta, as the subject, the unchanging subject. The point is, but that the Turiya is not confined to any of these states. So when we use the word seer in waking state, the experiencer in waking state, the point to remember is the Turiya associated with gross experience is indicated by the word Vishwa. If you remove that association, then the Turiya is the same Supreme Chaitanya reality. Similarly, in dream. In dream, who is the experiencer? The experiencer is Atman or Chaitanyam. Associated at the individual level with the subtle experiences is a seer. Now, that association with the act of experiencing subtle events in dream, if that is removed, then Turiya is the same reality. So Turiya is present in all the three states. But Turiya is different from all the three states because it is not confined to any of the three states. Unless Turiya was not limited by any of the three states, it can't be present in all the three states. If Turiya was confined, limited to one state, it can be present only in that state. But Turiya, Atman, is present in all the three states, but it is not confined to all the three states. If Turiya were not present in all the three states, we can never remember things. And we can never feel the blissfulness, the restfulness when we come out of deep sleep. So Turiya is present everywhere, but goes beyond both. This point should be kept in mind. Subtle point. Turiya is present in all the three states. But Turiya is not confined or limited by any of the three states. See, Vishwa as Vishwa is limited to waking state. But what is Vishwa, or the experiencer of waking state experiences, waking experiences? That experiencer in waking state is nothing but Turiya in association with the act of experiencing gross objects. Now, if that association is removed, the Turiya is the immanent, omnipresent, transcendental reality. It is Jiva only. It is Jiva which is experiencing all the experiences in waking, dream and deep sleep stage.
Swamiji, what I wanted to ask, although you didn't discuss this evening, this concept in Vedanta or experience, say, of the anahata, this unstruck sound, we're talking about sound in relation to the three states, can we say that that's, in that sense, is equivalent to Turiya?
Yes, no, please remember, there is a school of thought that is called Spodavada. Spodavada was a school of thought which was prevalent in Shankaracharya's time, where this anahata, this spoda, this sound, the original sound was equated with Brahman. That is Shabda Brahmavada, it is called. I mean, a school of philosophy where the sound, it was equated to the supreme reality. But Shankaracharya, Advaitins, Vedantins demolished this system of philosophy. It is not accepted in traditional Vedanta. This doubt may arise, you know. Anahata or this spoda, this original sound being equated to the supreme reality, Atman is Brahman, is not acceptable in Vedanta. It was refuted by Shankaracharya in Brahma Sutra Bhashya and even elsewhere also. In Mandukya is pure Vedanta, Advaita. It doesn't admit of anything. I'm approaching this text from that standpoint, remember. This is a point to be remembered. In this school of philosophy called Spodavada. Or you can remember also Shabda Brahmavada, which is more accurate because they equated Shabda means sound to Brahman. It is not accepted by Vedantins, Advaitins. Here, the Turiya is not a sound. Turiya is the origin from where all sound comes. And it is also the point where all sound cease to exist, where sounds cannot express the reality. That's the idea behind. Any? Another, all these are related to this. Yes, Bodhavada, Shabda Brahmavada. These are not, they are not actually based on the Upanishads. There are innumerable verses in the Vedic literature which support some of these views. The mainstream Advaitins do not accept this Bodhavada. It is now, it is no more found. I think. So in the next classes we will discuss these three levels of spiritual evolution and the corresponding methods of meditation and the results and all that is mentioned here. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramastu.